Welcome, everybody. Did this week go by really fast? I feel like we were just here. I'm so happy to be together, but I'm like, whoa, that does not feel like a week ago that we started talking about fear. It feels like 2 days ago. Okay. So we'll get started. I am really looking forward to our call today. It's the second of three live classes on Befriend Your Fear. And you'll also get supplemental recording on Befriend Your Fear as well. So last week we looked at some foundational principles related to fear and examples of some core underlying fears. Today, I'm going to walk us through step by step the Befriend Your Fear process. We'll kind of talk about it theoretically. And if we have time, we'll have some time to do some group work around it. And then in our next live class, hold on, let me just check the schedule. In our next live class, which is in the new year, so this is our last class of 2022 also, but in our next live class, we'll be doing a demo of the technique, and I'll be demoing it, and then we'll be breaking it down. The supplemental recording that you'll also have in your member center is another demo with a breakdown. This is one of those techniques that it's good to kind of listen and watch and observe a couple of times, as well as practice, so that you can really master and embody it. Before we jump into the step-by-step pieces of the process, I want to just do a very quick review of what we looked at last week, just as a reminder of some things as we move through today. So we looked at why it's important to befriend fear versus fight against fear or vanquish fear, or even let go of fear. As a side note on why it's important to befriend fear, you know, last week we looked at kind of how the making the friendship, the making the relationship is so important because that's what supports moving forward with it. But I also just want to drop in here the other reason why it is so valuable to befriend fear versus vanquish fear or destroy fear is that it supports us and our clients to get regulated with the presence of fear. It supports our clients to find regulation in their nervous system, a landing, more of a feeling of calm and ability to make decisions from an aligned place, even if there is something that is scary for them. And that's like the ultimate of actually what we're going for here. Again, we're not going for getting rid of the fear. We're going for, I see the fear is there, I feel it, and my container of myself, my body, my nervous system is strong enough to move forward and make aligned decisions with the fear. We looked at last week at how fear is common and normal and healthy and not something to be pathologized, how it's really an essential smoke detector, internal smoke detector. It's just that sometimes that smoke detector is a little too hypersensitive. we looked at how whenever we're in a process of growth or change, there's always something to risk, and how that can bring up fear. We looked at how in many ways our egos like to be comfortable, and not being comfortable can bring up fear. We also looked at how safety is both a real thing and also an illusion, and unpacked some ideas around safety. Yeah, and Lisa's saying in the chat, it seems more holistic to befriend the fear rather than try to get rid of it. Yeah, you've got a question mark on that, but I'm putting a period on that one. Well, I'd love to hear from a couple of you what's been resonating for you this week around all of this. As I said, for you, maybe the week went by for you as fast as it did for me. Maybe you haven't been consciously thinking about any of it at all. That's fine. But as we kind of sink back in today, what's really resonating for you? What's striking for you? What's feeling important? Who wants to share? Jennifer's saying that your inner mean girl was rampant and you were able to be gentle with her and get under the fear. It sounds like you were able, Jennifer, to deepen a relationship with the fear, which is exactly what we're going for. I'm so happy to hear it. Who else? What's resonating, or what have you been noticing? Anyone want to share? Monique.
So just like Jennifer, I think I mentioned last week that I can have a sassy attitude with fear. I can talk back to her. She can talk back to me. We're BFFs. But it's anxiety. That's who I need to befriend. And I suppose I've been peeling apart the layers over and over over the course of time. And I recently accepted her, and I hadn't, because I was that mean girl. I was like, I don't want you, get the F out of here, you don't belong here, because I believed she was a product of COVID. And there were two symptoms that COVID that never left me. It was anxiety and foggy brain. And so I just naturally assumed she was going to leave. So I recently said, I think I mentioned, I started to write a letter, and I'm like, oh, you know what this feels like she's the newborn in the family. All the other emotions I can work with, they're young adults, we get along great, but anxiety is the newborn, and anxiety needs me to hold her hand and brush her hair and just nurture. She's needier than the other emotions. Yeah. And so to just like, okay, guess what, anxiety, we're going on a journey, we're doing this project, and everyone else is on board. You're going to sit in the back seat. And to me, so I had this vision of everybody's in the car, like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Everybody's excited. Are we there yet? Even fear, like all the emotions, frustration, whatever it is, everyone's excited. Are we there yet? Anxiety's in the back seat going, I got to go potty. I got to go potty. And then it's like, again, you just went 10 minutes ago. So it's me having to pull the car over, like, it's okay. And she's only tinkling like a couple drops, right? She's not peeing. She's at the pee, but it's just that I have to give her the attention and tell her, hey, this is what we're doing. It's going to be okay.
Yes.
So it's not easy, but yeah, I get it.
No, it takes persistence and consistence, like what we've been talking about, and which is what a relationship takes,
right?
It takes relationship. It takes persistence and consistence and patience and all of that. And I love how you've been approaching it. It's so much in line with everything we've been talking about. And it also makes a good point to say, like, this process that we're learning, it can be applied to fear. It can be applied to anxiety. It can be applied to perfection. It can be applied to the need to control. You know, there's so many different applications of what happens when we become friends with this instead of pushing against this. What happens when we hold a compassionate container for this part of ourself that we're wanting to reject or hate on or criticize or judge? How can we shift that relationship and that container? So nicely done. Thanks for sharing that example. Heather.
Yes, I think the acronym for FEAR, false evidence appearing real, was a big help, especially using it with a lot of the clients I work with. And then also helping them be aware that fear is a manifestation of the ego. So, you know, just understanding that, you know, even though they may feel fear, like it's a piece of them, like the ego is a piece of them, and the ego likes to be boss. So, you know, the boss wants to make you feel fearful, but you don't have to, like you're your own person. So you don't have to feed into that.
That's right. I'm so glad you're bringing this piece up, and we're going to see this as we go through the process today, but I want to underscore it because it's so important. When we don't have a relationship with fear, it feels like it's all of us. It feels like we are completely merged with it because it's not relational, right? So it's just one big blob that we think is all of us. And we don't have choice when it's one big blob that we think is all of us. When we create a relationship with something like fear, it actually, it creates a little bit of a separation, not in a bad way, but so that it becomes relational. And then we see that it is a part of us, not all of us. And we're in a much better place to make decisions when it's relational and we see it as a part, not as all of who we are. Does that make sense, everyone? Good. Yeah, thanks so much for bringing that up, Heather. It's such a great piece. Good. Okay, good. And some great comments in the chat. Anamika was working on your content and writing out your vision last week, and you noticed all kinds of hidden fears and beliefs coming up. Yeah, once you see this stuff, you can't unsee it. You will start, you'll even just this understanding of it, you'll start to bring more, so much more awareness throughout the day to the fears and the beliefs. Good. Julie's saying, this reminds me of Tara Brach's teaching on R-A-I-N, recognize, allow, investigate, nurture. I love that. Yeah, that's really beautiful. And that is not unsimilar to some of the steps that we're about to step into. So let's start taking a look at the process, the step-by-step process of befriending fears. So the first step when we're working with clients and a fear comes up is to support our client to become aware of the fear. First, we have to co-create awareness, because sometimes for a client, they're not going to see that there's a fear there. They're just going to like feel the block or feel like they don't want to do the thing or not knowing why they're stopping themselves or why it feels so hard. So the more that we can become clear on what the fear is, then the more we can bring the fear out of the blind spot. When they're in the blind spot, when we're unaware of them, that's when they're most likely to sabotage us. And that's when they're more merged, as this is all of me. So just the cognitive creating awareness helps bring the fear from the blind spot out to the light, starts to create this relationship, starts to make it relational. So how do we support clients to become aware of fears? When we use our questioning skills, every now and again, we'll use a reflecting skill. It sounds like it might be a fear of blah, right? But for the most part, we want to ask questions that allow the client to identify the fear for themselves. So for example, one of my favorite questions, the what's at risk question. So if we've got a client that is starting to feel like, you know, maybe they've identified a vision or an action step or having a conversation with someone or whatever it is, and they either aren't doing it, you know, you get to the next session and they didn't take the action, even though it sounded like they really were going to, or you could already see as you're strategizing that there's going to be like, they feel overwhelmed or difficult, et cetera. You might ask the what's at risk question. What would be at risk for you if you were to really go after or achieve whatever the goal is? And I usually like to back that up with examples. So what relationship, what sense of self, what habit, what pattern, or what idea would be at risk for you if you were to fully 100% go after this thing? Or take this step, or do this thing. The what's at risk question can help bring up those fears, right? Of what would be at risk is someone might get angry at me. It's fear of anger. What's at risk is that I may not, you know, what's at risk might be that I might put this client in harm or danger, right? So there's the fear of causing harm, right? So the what's at risk can start to create awareness around what the fear is. Kelsey is asking in the chat, did you say to help the client understand or see their fear? That's right. That's the first step is becoming aware. So we want to ask questions so that the client becomes aware of the fear, sees the fear. Understanding the fear is going to be the next step. First, we just have to name what the fear is, right? The becoming aware of it. Another thing to create awareness on the fear is you can just straight up say, what are all the fears you have about moving forward with this? Or if there was a fear that was holding you back from doing this, or if there is a fear that might come up as you go to do this week, what would that fear be? Now, it doesn't have to be complicated questions, be straight up questions, but we want to become aware of the fear. Let me pause there. Any other questions on this step one? Pretty simple, right? Okay, so once we've created awareness, named the fear, then step two is supporting our client to understand their fear. We want to understand the fear a little bit more. Understanding the fear means seeing how this fear works in your life and how you react to the fear. When we can see how the fear shows up in our lives, how we react to it in our lives, how it works in our lives, it gives us a better grasp. And we're deepening the relationship, right? We're understanding it more. We're seeing it more for what it is. So we're still like tiptoeing in the step two into this making friends. Questions like, what other behaviors does this fear cause you to act out on, right? Oh, there's this fear of visibility. What other behaviors does this cause you to act on? Where else do you see this in your life? How does this show up for you in terms of actions or inactions that you take? What thoughts does this fear cause you to have? Right? So understanding the fear a little bit more so they can see. The other reason why this is helpful is because often a fear is not just impacting one place in somebody's life. It's showing up in lots of different ways. And when a client can see like, oh, that fear is showing up there and it's showing up there. And actually I didn't even realize, but then when I'm showing up late for meetings, it's because of that fear too. And then that causes XYZ, right? Like when they can see a little bit more of that bigger picture, see how the fears are functioning. Oh, that shows up every time I have a conversation with my mother, or right, like whatever it is, they're already creating more awareness. They're connecting more threads. They're bringing it more out of the blind spot and just starting to understand this better. Let me pause there. Any questions on that? Help your clients understand the fears more, where they're, see how they're working in their lives, how they react to that, what the impact is. Okay. Step three is where we start to really get now into the heart of the process. And up until now, we're mostly on the cognitive level. Step three is where we start to move into the heart level and the spirit level and the somatic level and really deepen this relationship with the fear. And I call step three honoring, engaging, and holding space for the fear. Honoring, engaging, and holding space for the fear. This is where we do it can be a somatic process. It can also be cognitive. We'll talk about that later, but this is where we dialogue with the fears. This is where we check in with the body and dialogue with the fear and hold the client through a process of really having a conversation, a loving conversation with the fear. When you dialogue with a fear, you learn even more about how the fear is working inside of you. And you're creating more of that relationship. You're bringing it more out of the blind spot. You're seeing it more as a part of you versus all of you. When you dialogue with the fear, you also get to see how the fear has been serving you, how it's been doing something for you. It wouldn't be there if it wasn't serving a purpose, right? Like our clients are all very smart people. We wouldn't be holding on to a fear so tightly if it wasn't doing something for us. When we can see what it's doing for us, then we can make better choices about how to move forward with it. Dialoguing with it also, like I said, it takes us into this deeper level of befriending because it helps us honor the fear, hold compassionate space for the fear. And even love on the fear. When we can hold that space, when we can honor, when we can love it, that's when it unblends even more from like, it's just part of this big blob of who I am. That's also when we can be seated in our adult self and resource from the current moment versus the there and then moment. Kelsey's saying in the chat, bringing the fear out of the shadow and into love. I love that. And then when we do all of this, when we can dialogue with it, when we can hold space for it, we can honor it, when we can love it and also tap into its highest wisdom, that's when we can really become like old friends with the fear and make decisions together. Because then the fear isn't like that man that we were talking about last week, you know, that whole clinging on to the jacket, right? That's when the fear can relax a little bit and open up because it knows it's not being ignored or hated on or that we're trying to vanquish it. It knows it's getting the loving attention that it deserves. So it doesn't have to like keep on being in your face and controlling so much. This will become more clear as we, I'll take us through a little bit of a visualization of befriend your fear. But let me pause right now and I'd love to hear from some of you. What are you hearing? What's feeling important about this honoring, engaging, and holding space for the fears? Who wants to share? Lisa.
I'm really liking that it feels like a totally different energy of embracing it and accepting it to an extent, rather than running away from it or trying to push it to one side. Or there's this sense I got before of almost like being split. There's my fear over there and I'm fighting it. Whereas this feels like everything's together somehow. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the words you're using, embracing and accepting. That is what this process is about. That's the best way to be able to move forward with something, is to embrace and accept. Thank you. Kelsey.
No, I love this so much. I do similar work with my somatic clients, right? Like with chronic pain, like really holding space and listening to these parts that can kind of get locked up in the body as well. And so it just, for me, it feels like a really easy, and well-known kind of path. And I love it. And I see how well it works in the body physically when we allow these structures to unwind. And so it makes a lot of sense that the fear would be kind of no different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I love that you're bringing that up because like I was saying before, it can be applied in many ways and to these physical pains or sensations or connecting with an illness to understand it more, become better friends with it. There's so many applications and like you're saying, the body is just like, it brings up the wisdom and it does so much to work with it in the body. It creates that regulation, all of the pieces. Yeah. Good. Anyone else want to share what you're seeing, what's feeling important so far? So later in the call, I'll model for as a group this step. I'll model it as a kind of feeling into the body. This can also be done for clients that don't want to go there or don't feel comfortable. Like this can also be done. The questions that you'll see I'll ask in the process can be done conversationally or through journaling as well. So there are different options. Always when we get to this point in the program in Sacred Depths, and we start to look at some more somatic pieces, and we start to work with fear, and we start to work with resistance, questions come up, and I like to share a little bit more about being trauma informed. And so I wanna, you'll have a whole handout in your member center on this, but I wanna share a couple of pieces that I think will be really, really helpful. And the first thing I wanna say is, I think that I share this in the handout too, but with some journaling that you can do, but I wanna say it voice to voice to all of you. I think that for so long, because in our society that trauma, like even uttering the word trauma was so taboo. It's just really in recent years that it's become more normalized and less pathologized. But I think that because forever it was like this, you know, like taboo thing, high integrity practitioners, like all of you, because I only draw high integrity practitioners, can sometimes start to get a little nervous around this conversation. Like, oh my gosh, I don't want to harm anyone. And, you know, if I like connect in with them, like, what is it going to mean? And am I going to, you know, like all the things. And so first thing that I want to say, or should I not work with someone if there's trauma, you know, like all the things. And so like, here's the first thing that I want to say. And this is so important, is number one, I don't think that at this point in our society, even before the last 3 or 4 years, but especially at this point, there's just no human being that hasn't that isn't walking around with some trauma response. There is a spectrum for sure, and we'll talk a little bit about knowing our scope in a moment, but this is part and parcel of working with human beings. Whether we're coaching them, whether we're a real estate agent and selling them a home, whether we are cut people's hair, like it's there. It is just part of what it means to be a human. And it comes up when we coach human beings, especially in things that like overworking, for example. You know, overworking can be a trauma response. So I don't want us to be scared of this. I want us to always hold ourselves to the highest standard possible, and to be aware and to have the skills of being trauma-informed, which I'm going to share with you, which we've already been looking at for the last 5 months. So yes, to being ethical and holding ourselves to the highest standard, but know to going into fears of I'm going to harm others by looking at fears with them. Being trauma-informed doesn't mean, so here's what it does not mean, that it's in our scope to go deep with a client into the crags of an event that created a trauma response inside of them. That's not, as a coach, that's not in our scope. For coaches, what is in our scope is to focus mainly on the resources and the wisdom that are currently available for a client and in the future will be available for a client. So part of our job is to create cognitive awareness between the then and there and the here and now, but not to hang out in the crags of the then and there. And I'll explain more how that we apply that in this process and other somatic processes in the next couple of minutes. So what being trauma-informed does mean is that first and foremost, we recognize as practitioners our own trauma and trauma responses, and that we check ourselves as best as we can not to bring those responses or reactions into the client container unchecked, right? This is why we keep on coming back to energetics in our work. And one of the reasons, so that we can be aware of our own responses. It means that we stay aware of our feelings and what we bring to the container. Again, being trauma-informed also means that we recognize the likelihood of trauma in the histories and the lives of the people that we serve. We recognize that it's very likely. And that we have awarenesses and skills that will help us lower the possibility of unintentionally triggering a trauma response. Trauma-informed practitioners also understand that trauma responses can be related either to personal experiences or to cultural and systemic discrimination or harm. So, trauma responses, as I said earlier, they're going to make their way into our coaching containers. Like, there's almost no way that they can't, whether it's overworking or shying away from speaking our truth. These are survival strategies that have developed in response to traumatic experiences. And I'm gonna like say this again, I really want to underscore it. As practitioners, it's our job to support our clients in creating awareness of these survival strategies, as well as supporting them to make the distinction between the then and there and the here and now. When we do this, when we create awareness of the survival strategies, when we help create that distinction between the past and the present, that's when we help our clients resource themselves from the here and now moment, or even from the future moment. When a client is resourced from the here and now, new energy, inspiration, choices can come forward, new solutions and brainstorming can emerge. So the befriend your fear process and this experience of honoring and engaging and dialoguing with the fear, however the client is holding it in their body, can help the client identify what the then and there moment was and the survival strategy that it's based in. It also supports the client to connect into how they feel in their body in the here and now while experiencing the fear. So we're not, and this is an important distinction that I want to make. We're not asking the client how it felt in their body when it happened there and then. That's out of our scope. But when we ask the client, how does it feel in your body right now? That is creating more of that relationship and sourcing from the here and now. When we support a client to dialogue with their body in the here and now, that's also engaging the resources in the here and now. It's engaging their current cognitive wisdom, their current body wisdom, their current heart wisdom, their spirit wisdom. And it's also helping looking forward to the future. The process, like I said earlier, also supports a client to regulate as they explore the fear. And part of that is because they're co-regulating with us. It's the space that we're holding. It's the slowness and the love and the compassion that we're holding as we support them to navigate through it. So I want to let me pause there. What's feeling important in all of this? What are you seeing? Who wants to share? Caroline.
I think that's really helpful just to talk through the trauma piece and just really acknowledging that everybody has had some sort of trauma. So that's, we can't shy away from it. We have to, in order to be good practitioners, that's part of the deal. Yeah.
It is.
Helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad you're underscoring that because it has been taboo for so long, but there's just no way to work with another human being without it showing up. Now, it's important to know our scope in it. You know, if we do a befriend your fear process or other processes, et cetera, and like we see after a couple of times that the client keeps on getting pulled back to the there and then, and they can't make that distinction between the then and there and the here and now, that then we know, okay, this is out of our scope as coaches. This is the client may want to concurrently work with a therapist or first work with a therapist. That doesn't mean that the fear isn't going to keep on cropping up, but if they keep on merging back to the there and then. Sarah.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a session 2 weeks ago with a client who was advised by a therapist to lie to her teenage son and say, oh, we had you captured and placed in a program because the school district told us we had to. And the kiddo was sort of looking at his mom going like, that is just so lame. She was clearly dysregulated from the beginning of this call. Like she's like, hi, I'm going to read you this letter. You know, she jumped in. And what happened for me was I remembered back to my own experience with my child, even though she wasn't taken away in the same manner, and how later she called us out. And we started to just really be more grounded in this is what we need to do and how regulating that was. But in the process of being the coach, it was amazing to me how quickly I went toward, I couldn't acknowledge my own fear.
Yes.
And I went right to, well, let's talk about that. Is that, how does that, you know, I tried, but it was a camouflaged version of my own fear. And I honestly don't know what to do in those moments. So if you have any guidance.
Yeah. I mean, so it's such a great question. And first of all, like Fanshan is saying in the chat, I'm like still stunned at what that therapist was doing. But anyway, for us, right? So it's about this practice, which is why I keep on coming back to energetics, for us to be with our own fears, befriend our own fears outside of the client containers, for us to take care of our bodies and our nervous systems, our containers, so that we can go into client sessions and group sessions as grounded and regulated as possible, right? Like all of those inner practices with our own stuff, as well as we can call them outer practices and staying grounded and regulated. That's the best advice I can give for those moments. Sometimes I'm in sessions and something will happen in a session and I can feel like I'm having a response to this internally, right? It's not that that's not going to happen. Like we're human beings. Of course it's going to happen, you know? But the more that I do my work, all these practices that we're learning here outside of the container, the more that I can catch myself in those moments, take a deep breath, come back to my body, even say to the client, hold on one moment. You know, I just want to like check in with myself here, you know, and I hand on my heart and I come back to like, okay, I see I'm scared of blah, blah, blah. And also I'm in my body right now. Right. And then I can move forward with the client. Is that helpful?
That's really helpful. Yeah. We've got the prayer. Actually, I realize it would probably help me to sit with what I am afraid of that comes up. Cause there, the patterns, there's like six stories basically with the clients that I'm doing, you know, that's an exaggeration, but I could develop my awareness more. And any advice for after it happens and the session's over?
Yes. First and foremost, love yourself, have compassion for yourself. Remember that you are a human being having a human experience and there is no such thing as perfection, right? So that's number one, like love up on yourself versus going into the like, blah, 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 right? Because all the judgment, it just creates further dysregulation. Remember that if the container with your client is strong, because of all of the things that we've been looking at, it is strong enough to handle a rupture if there's repair.
Right.
Right. Sometimes we think there was a rupture when there actually wasn't a rupture. So we need to get we need to get regulated and then assess from the here and now resources if something really went off or it was just that we were feeling it a little internally. But then from that place, if we're like, actually, I need to clarify or I need to whatever, then we do that, right? And we can't count on rupture never happening, but we have to remember that how we repair is the important part of that. I like, in terms of being a parent, I have to remind this for myself all the time with my kids, right? Like, cause I'm like messing up all over the place and they're in like all these little lessons, right? But how do I approach it?
Right.
You know, what am I doing?
Right. Right. You're reminding me that I have a handout on repairing with your teen or young adult. I think I might go look at it. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. Great questions. I oftentimes think of coaching as having so many similarities to parenting. It's helped me become a better parent. I'll put it.
Right.
Okay. So in the handout, one of the resource sheets that you'll have in your member center that goes along with today's session, it'll lay out everything I just shared. It will also give different tips for when you're working somatically with a client to be trauma-informed. Some of the things we've already covered, like before leading your client into the process, get permission first, ask if the client would like to go deeper. One thing that I didn't learn until maybe 3 years ago, I used to always just say to a client, close your eyes. I didn't know that for some clients that can trigger a trauma response. So inviting a client to close their eyes if it feels comfortable and aligned, but also giving them the option to keep their eyes open if that's their preference. Anyway, I give just lots of different tips and tools. Don't ask a client to modulate their breathing. That can sometimes create a trauma trigger, right? I have them be in their natural breath. So I give you just lots of different pointers like that in the handout. And maybe the most important pointer for you to enjoy yourself through the process. Holding space for these processes can be so much fun and so satisfying and like help us feel like we're making impact and being on purpose in our lives and in our work. Don't try as much as you can not to be scared or work on your fears. You can enjoy this. It is such a gift to hold space for another, in general, all the work we do to hold space for another human being, and to hold space for them to connect in, to see what, how their fear is showing up and to become better friends with the fear. Good. Yeah, and thanks for that in the chat, Michelle, about the sighing or the exhaling. Okay, there's a couple more steps in the process, and then I'll lead us through kind of like a little bit of a mini of all of this as a group. So step four isn't really its own step. I need to find a better way to say this so that it's not confusing, but hopefully it won't confuse you. It's not its own separate step. Step four is just like baked in to the whole process, but I pull it out as its own step because it's so important, which is connect to spirit, trust, and love. Connect to spirit, trust, and love. So in order to really make friends with the fear, it's important to partner the fear or to bring trust and love to the process. Trust can be trust in ourselves, supporting the client to trust themselves, trust in the universe, all of that, inviting the client to love on themselves, to love on the fear, no matter what. To love themselves, whether they feel the fear or they don't feel the fear, right? To know that they're whole and complete, no matter what. So I just put that in there as a reminder of the love and the trust and the compassion and the respect that the whole process, it is just baked into it. My next step, once you've gone through all of that and the client can name the fear and understand the fear and has had a dialogue with the fear and has created this deeper relationship with it, maybe gotten a little bit more regulated with it, then the next step, let me move away from this noise. Sorry. All right. Then the next step is to make a choice. Then your client is in a position to make a choice. So what I mean by this is that once that they've become aware of the fear, you know, moved through all of the pieces so far, seen how it's served, once they've honored the fear, once they've received wisdom from the fear, then they're at the part of the process where they can, instead of working against the fear or the fear controlling them because they feel like it's all part of them, instead, that's the part of the process where your client can decide with the fear how much attention to actually pay to the fear when you're taking action. And you can decide with the fear what actions you want to take next, even if those actions still feel a little hard or uncomfortable, right? We're not going for it's not like hard or uncomfortable. We're just going for I'm willing to do this. So at this point of the process, I will ask the client what action they want to take next. How would they like to move forward with the fear? Here's an important piece. We already know never to be attached to an outcome in coaching. And it's important as the practitioner to not get attached to the outcome of, well, so now they're definitely going to take that action step that they were having trouble with. That's not the point of this. In most cases, your client will be willing to take that next step or a version, a tweaked version of it, a half step towards there. But in some cases, after dialoguing with the fear, the client's going to be like, no, I'm not going to make that video. But here's the difference between them making that decision at this point in the process versus making that decision before they've befriended the fear. Before they've befriended the fear, they haven't actually made that decision. It's just happening to them and they feel disempowered in it. If they decide in this part of the process that they're still not going to make the video or go on the dating site or whatever it is coming from an empowered, aware place where they are at choice. Does that make sense? They might be like, you know what? I would like to make that video, but I know that I'm not ready right now. Like right now, I actually feel like I need rest for the next month before I can really contemplate that, right? That's empowered. That's great. That's at choice. And then the last step in the process is, oh, Heather, go ahead. Yeah.
I just want to ask if, you know, that empowered place is the same as like that place of agency.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. Right. Because they are now seeing the fear for what it is. They're working with it. They're hopefully in a little bit more of a regulated place because of the process and the befriending and the space. And then they can more better assess what is right for me moving forward. So it is that place of agency and that choice. And it might be in that moment, they're like, you know what, this is too much for me, or this doesn't feel right for me. But then it's not like they're trying to make it happen, but it's just happening to them that it's not getting done or they're feeling overwhelmed by it. That makes sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, good. Okay, so last step in the process, committing and recommitting and coming back persistently and consistently to the making friends. So that's just another version of the difference between the breakthrough and the transformation. And in the session, it will hopefully be a beautiful breakthrough and new awarenesses and all of that. But there's follow through work that needs to happen, maybe continuing to dialogue with the fear or tracking the fear throughout the week or talking to the fear throughout the day or when it comes up or making a collage about the fear, right? Like so many different ways to continue to deepen the relationship and come back, but keep that awareness and that intentionality and forge the relationship. Okay, so I'm going to take you all in a group way through like a mini sort of all of these steps so that you can begin to get a sense. But really in the recording that you'll get over the next couple of weeks and when we meet next, I'll do a full demo of the one-on-one and we'll really unpack it. What we're going to do now is more for you to just kind of like continue to like toe dip into these ideas. So I'm going to start with step one, which is naming or creating awareness around the fear. I'm going to do this in a manufactured way since we're not like in one-on-one sessions and a fear is coming up that I'm hearing and listening to as I talk to you. So this is not what I'm going to ask next wouldn't normally be part of the process, but since we're kind of doing this in a group in a manufactured way, I'm going to ask this question. What's a goal that you're wanting to achieve right now that's in arrested development or a little bit of arrested development? What's a goal that you're wanting to achieve right now that's in arrested development or a little bit of arrested development? Maybe it's a business goal for you. Maybe it's client goal. Maybe it's personal. It's to do with a relationship or your home. All right, next question. I'm going to ask you the what's at risk question. What would be at risk for you if you were to really go after or achieve this goal? What would be at risk for you if you were to really go after or achieve this goal? So what relationship would be at risk for you? What sense of yourself would be at risk for you? What habit or pattern or idea would be at risk for you if you were to fully 100% go after this goal that you want? I'll put that in the chat too. Give you another moment with that. And then based on what's come up so far, what are some of the fears that come up when you think about taking action or achieving this goal? What are some of the fears that come up when you think about taking action towards or achieving this goal? Okay, so we've just done step one, created awareness about some fears. And so I'm going to ask you if you've named more than one fear that's rolling around with this goal, just for the sake of this process, pick one to work with. You can always go back and listen to the recording and work it with the others as well, but pick one to work with. And share it in the chat. What fear are you working with? Fear of failure for Caroline, fear of loss of control. Good. For Lisa, who else? For Doris, fear of visibility. For Jennifer, fear of being criticized. Yeah. Who else? Fear of burnout. Yeah. Fear of not having the energy to maintain success. Fear of failure. Or fear of success, and I'll have to work even harder. Fear of judgment, fear of failure. Yeah. Oh, that people won't take me seriously. Mm-hmm. Monique, what's the, I don't know if I understand what you're saying in the chat. What's the fear in there?
It's I don't know what I don't know. It's I'm about to embark on this
fear of not knowing. Yeah.
But also that ignorance.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then that can be dangerous or harmful, the things that I don't know. Good. Okay, we're going to just go lightly into step two. What behaviors does the fear cause you to act out? What behaviors does the fear cause you to act out or not act out? Not showing up and being visible. Yeah. Expansion too. Yeah. What behaviors does the fear cause you to act out or not act out? Who else? Share in the chat. Not scheduling the workshop. It's never the right time. Yep. Lack of consistency, self-sabotage, procrastination, avoidance. Being late. Yep. Sabotage. Okay, good. Good. So we can kind of see these behaviors. So Julie, for yours that you won't effectively support your clients in bringing out breakthroughs and transformations rather than simply recounting what they're struggling with, you know, that's very, very specific to your client work. And as we go into step three, it might be helpful to work with like the fear that's, tell me if this lands for you, like the fear that's underneath that fear. Is it like a fear of not being good enough or fear of not being effective enough or fear of being surface?
All of those examples you gave feel true.
Yeah. Is there one that you'd like to hone in on that feels really resonant for you?
I guess really just fear of not being good enough. Like, I think that what I'm good at is holding space and allowing a client to feel really seen and heard, held and supported, but like that I do keep things a little, maybe I want to say more surface than I'd like to. And I think what I'm also hearing and feeling is like more surface than you do. So there's that comparison.
So fear of not being as good as fill in the blank. Okay, good. That's a great one to work with. And so practitioner note for everybody, one of the reasons why I'm asking Julie to like hone in more is because when I see the fear that you were identifying with, that you are identifying, I'm like, how am I going to help you see how it relates to the then and there? And because it's so specific to client work, like in the last couple of years, I know that there's something underneath it that relates to the then and there, comparing yourself to others versus I'm going to stay on the surface with my clients. It's like, that's the surface fear. And then there's the fear underneath it that can help create more awareness. Does that make more sense?
Totally. Yeah. You know, and I feel like even just what you just did right there is such a perfect example of a really simple way that I could be more effective in going deeper with clients.
Well, it's good that like I'm modeling and learning, and also this piece about I have to be better than, or I have to be as good as. We don't want that to stand in your way of that outreach. And
what I notice is when I'm in the experience with a client, I'm so in the experience with the client that I'm totally not comparing myself or concerning myself with being as good as. It's the reflecting afterwards, like, oh, shoulda, coulda, woulda, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never been there. Just kidding. All right, so let's move into step three, which is the actual dialoguing with the fear. And we're going to just lightly go into this as a group and see a little bit what's there and just have space to have opportunity to hold space for the fear and honor it and love on it if that's available and hear from it. Make more friends with it. So if it's comfortable for you, I invite you to close your eyes. And if it's not comfortable or aligned to close your eyes, keep your eyes open and go inward. And take a few moments to arrive in your body, to become aware of your body, to be with your body. And I invite you to locate where in your body you're holding the fear that you identified. Where in your body are you holding the fear? Just feel it out. It might be a tingling sensation or a little bit of tension or just wherever your awareness is bringing you to. Where is that fear living inside of you today? Where are you holding it? And wherever it is, I invite you to hold space for the fear as if it were a client or a child that you love. So just be with the fear and hold space for it. And see if you can even bring some compassion as you hold space for this fear. And just be with it and hold space for it. And be with it. And if you are someone who is able to visualize, I want to invite you to go in almost like you were a detective, go into your body with a flashlight, a magnifying glass, and see what this fear looks like in your body. What does this fear look like in your body? Does it have a color or a shape or an image? Notice what it looks like because you just continue to hold space for it. Connect with it. Notice if it feels hot or cold, where the fear is, or damp or dry, or if it smells like anything. Just take it in with all five senses. And then continue to connect with it, whether you can see an image or not. Just continue to connect with it and feel it. And be with it and hold space for it. And ask the fear, how long have you been with me? Just seeing what wants to come up. How long have you been with me? You might hear the answer or see it or sense it. Or nothing. Just continue to be with it. And ask the fear, is there a particular event or series of events that brought you into being? In my life, is there a particular event or series of events that brought you into being? Continuing to connect with it and hold space for it and be with it and even bring compassion and love if you can. and ask the fear, what purpose have you served in my life? What purpose have you served in my life? What has been your higher purpose? Continuing to connect with the fear and hold space, curiosity for it, with it. Just be with it. And ask the fear from your highest wisdom, from your highest self and your highest wisdom, fear, what is it that you want me to know? From your highest self, what is it that you want me to know? And then asking the fear what it wants you to know about your next steps. What does it want you to know about next steps or actions? If there's anything it wants you to know. And take a moment and thank your fear for showing up and for being with you, and thank it for the ways that it served. And then for now, you can let it go. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Take a minute to jot down anything that you want to jot down that came through that you want to remember. Okay. I'd love to hear a share or two on what came through for you that feels important. I just want to say we're probably going to go about 3 minutes over. If you need to hop off exactly at 4:30, you'll catch the end of the recording, but I'm going to take us to like 3 or 4 minutes past. I'd love to hear a share maybe too on what came through, what feels important. What did you see? Jennifer.
Hi. So that was really powerful. I didn't mean to do that again. So honestly, everything is in my chest. That's where I feel everything, like tightness, anxiety, all of that. So that's where my fear was. But when I got in there, it was me with my my head on my knees, and I was sitting there in the dark. And that was really powerful. And what she was saying was like, she's just been trying to keep me safe this whole time, like to keep me, you know, guarded and safe and then not put myself out there. But then as we were dialoguing, it was like, she wants to be a part of this journey and do it scared. And so can we do it together? So it was really just an interesting, powerful visualization. And I'm bad at visualizing, so that was really awesome. And that she just wants to be loved and to be a part of it. And like, and kind of like we linked hands and we're like, okay, we, you know, we're going to do this together and step forward together. So thank you. It was really good.
Oh, I love it. I love that all that came through. And just to skip ahead to step six of the reconnecting and the persistence and consistence. My suggestion would be to maybe if you can make a couple dates with her over the next week or two and journal with her or take her out to the garden and have a walk with her, but continue this beautiful connection and relationship you started with her.
Thank you. Yeah. So good. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for one more share. Who else wants to share what came through? What's feeling important? Anyone want to share? Kelsey.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So I was working with a fear of burnout, and I've actually been having trouble with my right hip and having trouble starting this new business. And it very much feels like the fact that it's on the right side and it's the kind of locomotive part of me makes a lot of sense. So I was taken there, and what came forward was, I celebrated 10 years of sobriety yesterday. And what really came forward was that this fear, like part of my use was from being an overachiever, and keeping up in really high, intensity kind of programs and conservatories. And that's really what started the use was just to keep up. And I'm a, if anybody follows human design, I'm a projector. So I have very little energy kind of naturally. And so starting this new business has me kind of scared because, other businesses I've had in the past have burnt me out. But it was really beautiful to see that this fear is really been like, it's helped keep me sober, from like not letting me kind of step into those burnout areas. But I couldn't get much as far as next steps. So that's interesting to me for sure. Like it very, I'm not sure. I'm going to definitely be spending some time there.
So I just want to normalize that. I toss that in there in case there are some folks that are ready for next steps, but I took us through this pretty briefly. And oftentimes like the fear needs more time, have more of a relationship. It's not necessarily ready for next steps. It sounds like you established such a beautiful connection in the work that you did do. And I would like my recommendation, like you said, would be to just keep on being with it. And also you can ask it, you can say, I honor you so much for the ways that you've kept me sober and have protected me. And I really would like for this business to get going. What do you need to know from me? What are, right? Like, what are some agreements that you need from me? And so that's not next steps yet, but it's starting to like move towards, okay, now how can we work together so we can start to make some decisions on next steps?
That's really helpful. Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so glad you're sharing. Okay, so just in a couple minutes that we have left, we've pretty much done steps 1 through 4. Step 5 is about making a conscious choice. Some of you like I said to Kelsey, we went through this, you know, pretty like in brief, but you might be ready at this point to make a conscious choice about an action, not like 10 actions, right? But one action that you would like to take over this week. It might just be about continuing. That action might dovetail into step six, like continuing to work with that fear, like Kelsey and I were just talking. Or you might be like, no, actually, you know what? I want to write that post that I've been holding back on writing, or I do want to put up that dating profile or think about it, right? So with what you know now, what's one action that you would like to take this week that feels doable, even if it feels stretchy? And share it in the chat. Michelle's going to schedule a start date. Nice. Caroline's going to brainstorm what group could look like in your business. Good. Doris is going to commune with your fear and dialogue a bit more. Good. Jennifer is going to put yourself out there as a one-on-one coach, not just group coaching. Nice. Who else? What's one step, even if it feels stretchy, that you feel willing to do? Anita's gonna reach out to a high school classmate who is interested in coaching. Good. All right, step six is the commitment. So whatever your action step is, inner step, outer step, I want to invite you to put it in your calendar if that feels right for you. Commit to it. If it's very stretchy, I also want to invite you to tell someone that you're going to do it. It could be your coaching partner in this program. It could be a friend. You could share it in our Facebook group. And then the other piece of the commitment is to continue to work with the fear, to dialogue with it. That might be what your action step is anyway, but regardless, if you have, I know we're hitting up on the holidays, but continue to dialogue with the fear. All right. I know we are over time. I would love to end just with you writing down what you're taking away from our time today. And I'd love for the last word to be from one of you. What are you taking away from our session today? Who'd like to share? What are you taking away? Anyone want to share? Jennifer saying in the chat, your fear isn't a negative. It's something to work with and have a relationship with. Beautiful. Anita.
So I want to share an aha moment that I had during the process. And my fear was fear of not being taken seriously, that my business and that I'm a life coach and what I can offer will not be taken seriously. And then I discovered that under this fear is also fear of not getting support. And in this fear is also a solution, because if I look for support and for support systems that I have, then even if I'm not taken seriously by some people, I know I can rely on support system and system and keep moving forward.
Yes. I got chills when you said that, that you realize that this fear is also the solution. So beautiful and profound and so well done.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I am going to be thinking about you all over the next couple of weeks. If you are celebrating holidays over the next couple of weeks, I am wishing you to enjoy and to also take good care of yourself. I know it's can sometimes be happy, can sometimes be stressful, can sometimes be both and all of the above. And so just sending you all lots of love. I'm around for the next week. If there's anything that you need, just let me know. And if not, I'll see you in the new year. Bye. I can also hang on a minute if anybody needs anything too.